So we're here, we've got another special guest for episode 8 of season 2, and that guy is called Mark Asquith.
Hi, I'm Steve Rick.
And I'm Tim Elliott.
And welcome to the RE of Marketing podcast.
A podcast where we rethink, replay and remark on all good things to do with branding and marketing. Mark, say hello, introduce yourself, what you do and all that sort of stuff.
Hello, I'm Mark Asquith. I run Rebel Base Media. We make podcast technology, including Captivate.fm and a few other bits and bobs.
Ah, nice. We spoke in our little intro, mine and Steve's intro, about Captivate and how very cool it is and easy to use and a great UI. So you have to be... I know we're talking today about the future of podcasting and just generally how cool podcasting is, but I'm sure we'll get on to building a tech company because Steve's in that world, aren't you, Steve? A bit.
Yeah, I'm in that world, and I love tech. And honestly, your Captivate is so simple to use. And we're not doing this for a plug, by the way. We are in a way, but we're not.
You know. Well, keep on plugging. I like it. I'm in.
I don't think I've ever gone on to a UI or had a UX journey that's been so simple for something so new. You know, when you get into new mediums to do things, such as podcasting, to be able to go onto there and complete your task within 2 or 3 minutes is actually quite awe-inspiring from a tech perspective.
Well, thank you very much. That means a lot. And it's sort of come from a twofold perspective. That, like, number one, being a podcaster. Like, we've been doing podcast hosting for a long time before Captivate. We did it with our original WordPress platform. So we run another platform called Podcast Websites, which is essentially now it's pivoted to being like a WP curve for podcasters, which is great. It works fine. But originally, it was like this fully hosted WordPress platform. And we built a hosting backend for it. We just didn't generate the RSS feeds on site because I'm just not a fan of that model of generating RSS feeds. I think if you're a podcaster, it should be generated off site. That's my personal opinion on it. But we had this hosting backend. So we had all the infrastructure for the actual audio hosting and to be a podcast host. And we did it for years. So Captivate kind of was luckily like came off the back of that one. But then also like the second part of that was, because Captivate came off the back of me being a podcaster and just, you know, I think when we launched Captivate, I'd published at least 1,100 podcast episodes, at least. Wow. And been guests on probably 400. So I knew the bits that were just extraneous, the bits that were superfluous, the bits that the other podcasting incumbents wanted you to keep worrying about, you know, because that's how they made the money. You know, if people can keep stuff complex, then you keep paying them for the solution. And it's like, you know, I feel like a lot of platforms have evolved past that. You know, you're not selling the answer to a problem. What you're actually selling is the outcome. And as long as you can get someone to the outcome as quickly as possible, they don't kind of mind paying for that. And if you wrap that in a great experience and you can get away with some good UI, then you'll do all right. But, you know, podcasting was one of those really interesting places where, even to this day, like some of the incumbents, even when they develop quote unquote new stuff, new interfaces, it still looks like 2011. And, you know, it's someone still harping on about Web 2.0 to them somewhere, evidently. And I think if you just build it, it's the old classic trope, and you just build it for yourself. That's where Captivate came from. And I'll not lie, like, I'm no UI designer, but we don't have a designer. Like, Kieran and I have just done this ourselves. And the reason that I think it works is because all we do is anything that annoys the crap out of me, we take out. Yeah. And anything that I want to make, like little things, like the first one was that. So I started using the platform. There was me and Ian Anderson Gray. We were the first two people to ever use Captivate. And I was publishing. I launched the Podcast Accelerator, which is my show. I rebranded it. I launched it in May of the year that we launched Captivate. So I started using Captivate way before anyone else. And I was like, why have I got to upload an episode and then set the publish time for that episode? Why the hell have I got to do that? It's silly. Wouldn't it be better if I could just set a default publish time in the episode settings? So we just built that because I was annoyed. And then when we launched Captivate, everyone was like, oh my God, like, you can set a default publish time. And I was like, well, yeah, of course you can. Like, it's not, this is not a rocket science. It's just because it pissed me off. So,
it's simple things that make people buy in, isn't it? Those simple, when you've actually had that user journey and gone through it yourself, and you know the bits that you, that's the bit that makes any platform great.
And I think it's continuing to do it as well. You know, I think, you know, I still publish a minimum of 3 podcast episodes a week. And there's always something that comes up. You know, there's always something that comes up where I think, I'm not keen on that. Or wouldn't it be good? Like we did one the other day, which was a tiny little thing, which was at the top of Captivate. You've got this little, like a JavaScript copy RSS feed link. So you click the button, and from anywhere you are in Captivate, you click that little link and it will copy your RSS feed into your clipboard, and you can just stick it where, you know, if you want to paste it into Apple Podcasts or whatever. And I was in distribution, in the distribution section. I think I was submitting to, it must have been somewhere that doesn't support like single clicks, or like maybe, I don't know, Ghana or something like that. And I was like, well, wait a second. Like as a user, I want to actually see this link, this RSS feed link, even though I know clicking that button gets me the link into my clipboard. It'd be good to see just to make sure, because I was wondering, is this the right show? So we just, a tiny little UI tweet, we just put the URL right at the top of that distribution screen as well and put another copy button next to it. And it's only tiny things like that that take, like that literally took about 45 seconds to add it. We stuck it in a release, in the release notes every Thursday. And that was one of the most revered things that we've done over the last 6 months, was like this 45 second tweak, because I was just like, my brain didn't work. So I thought other people's brains must be struggling. And what's fascinating to me about this is that like a lot of smaller tech companies, the reason that I say all that is a lot of smaller tech companies, and even a small window cleaning companies and small like accountancy firms, every small business, a small agency, a marketing company, like they sort of get processes and put them in the way. You know, they'll see all these processes. They'll read the latest startup book and they'll think, right, crap, we've got to overhaul the entire process to, you know, our release process, our sprint post process has got to be like this. And we kind of just threw all that out the window. And, you know, you can respond to things quicker. You can be a bit more agile without forcing agile processes in to make yourself look like you're agile when actually all you're doing is not being very agile. And I think that's a huge lesson for people. Like, just get it done. And you're not really going to break anything, because if you break something, you just revert it. Like, it's very hard to break something if you built it properly. He says, like, today, I will probably break something today.
And if you change something that people don't like, they'll always let you know.
Oh, God, yeah. Dude, like, you know, this is like one of the weirdest things, isn't it, about being in tech? You know, you'll hear from the fans about the stuff that they love, but you hear from everyone about the stuff they hate. Like that, I should write that down.
It is. It's so much harder to get somebody to say, I like that, but it's so easy to get, I hate that.
Oh, it really is, dude. You know, I remember I think I got my first 1-star podcast review years ago, and I was like, oh, that's it, I'm quitting. And then I think about 6 weeks later, I got my first email unsubscribe, and it literally just said F off in the unsubscription comments. I wouldn't even get a notification that someone had unsubscribed if they didn't fill the comments in. So they actually filled the comments in so that I would get that notification. It literally says, I will send you notification to the sender of this email if you type comments in. So they just put F off. I'm like, geez. So the haters are always more vocal. You know,
you've got to have more fun, haven't you? You know, so in, like when somebody wants to unsubscribe from email list and you can pre-populate your subject line, it should be, please take me off your fucking list, it's crap. You know, so when that comes through,
exactly,
you laugh every time that somebody's done that, because you know you've had the last word with it.
Oh, mate, that is such a, like, that is so my approach. Like, I've got an anti-dickhead policy anyway. So it's like, if you're a dick for whatever reason, I've got a bit of a 2-strike rule. Like most people have got 3 strikes, and like I employ this 2-strike rule in particular with people that you, people that are paying your money. Like, and this takes a lot of being in your 30s and 40s to have the balls to do this. Like in your 20s, a lot of people won't do it. And if they do, they'll do it with like a Gary Vee slant, which is just because they think it's cool to do it. And like, I genuinely live by this rule. Like, you can be a dick once, and if you drop an F-bomb, I'll tell you off. Like, don't, you can swear with me, but don't swear at us. And if you then do it again, you are, I don't care who you are, if you're Facebook, if you're a brand, I don't give a shit who you are, you will not ever be on any platform we build ever again. And it will, there'll not be a, there'll not be no warning. It will be, you will be off that day. I will tell you to move. And the reason for that is not to sound like some sort of contrarian, you know, it's an interview, we'd better do some stuff that gets shares. You know, it's not for any of that crap. It's so that, like, the team aren't worrying. And, you know, the last thing I want is any one of the team to dread turning up to work. Yeah. Like, I used to stay up when I was in my 20s running the agency. Like, if I had a knobhead client, you know, someone that was usually paying, more often than not, paying less than anyone else was. And they were always the ones that you dread waking up to the emails from, or you'd check the email before bed just to make sure there was nothing on fire. And, you know, if you start your own business and, like, your mum says to you, tell me, you know, why have you started your own business? No one ever answers with, well, it's so I can stay up late at night worrying about dickheads that don't pay me anything. No one ever says that. They always say, so I can do fun stuff, or have the last laugh, or do things in my own way. And it interests me because it's, I think now with this age of personal branding and, you know, fake authenticity as well, I think so many people say that, you know, work with the people that you want to work with, and your message and your branding, your positioning will repel the rest. But I think you've got to live by it. And it takes some bollocks to do it. Like, really takes balls to be able to say, I don't care who you are, just leave, you know? And it really does take some guts to do it, but you feel so much better.
You definitely get a better filter as you get older, right? I think it becomes a lot stronger. I wrote down in my notes as you were talking, I was listening to you talking there, but I think you hit on a good point that, like, what you don't do, what you're not doing becomes equally as important as what you do, right? Whether that's building a tech platform, or whether that's building a podcast, or just in business as general, right? Like, it took me many years to get to a point of understanding it's more important to say no to stuff than yes, right? And I think that's a good lesson to start from. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it's fascinating, because there's definitely a there's this concept that I obviously didn't invent it, but I'd call it bad money, like, years ago. So I used to do a lot of, like, business, whatever, talking, mentoring, blogging, content. Like, I got into podcasting largely because of DC Comics, then secondly because of business and talking about business. And since, you know, sort of pre what I'm doing now, which is, like, really leaning into podcasting and helping people with podcasting and kind of embracing that podcast industry, I've only really fully lent into that the last couple of years. But before that, I was podcasting, making podcast tech, but also helping people with, like, business. Yeah. And it was that it split my focus. So I just lent fully into podcasting. But back in those days, I used to do a lot of talks. I think I spoke about it at, like, Content Marketing Live, whatever it was, CMA Live, up for Chris. And this idea of bad money, where not all money is created equally. And bad money can come into your business in so many different ways, but it's like bad blood. It's like infected blood. And it might not kill you today, but one day you'll be running up a hill because you've got to get to the top, and or you've got to run up the stairs, or you need to do something very important. Suddenly your body gives out and you don't know when it's going to come, but it will. It'll pull the rug out from underneath you. And this bad money can come from so many different places. It can come from bad investors. It can come from bad customers. It can come from bad product. It can come from saying yes to the wrong thing. It can come from splitting your focus. But the underlying barometer for all of this is always your gut feeling. Like, so here's an example of this. We're just recruiting for a head of marketing, whatever, marketing manager, whatever you want to call it. You know, if someone comes in and wants a title, they can have the title as long as do the job. I don't really care. I don't even know what we're recruiting for. Some kind of senior marketer, all right? Just whatever title they want, they can have. So we offered this chap the role, and I had a bit of a gut feel. I don't know why. He was a great candidate and we got on really, really well. Like, we went through all the interview, multiple process, interviewed him along with the rest of the team. And we offered him it. And I don't know why I had this kind of weird gut feeling. I don't know why. It was just this gut feeling. Sure enough, 3 days later, he was like, oh, actually, even though I've accepted the role, got the contracts all sorted, accepted the salary, I want more money. And I'm like, well, you've had your chance, pal. See you later. And the reason for that was the gut told me that that would have been bad money. The money that we would have invested would have been bad money because inevitably he was chasing the short term, and it was always, you can always tell when a short term fix is not going to serve the long term, and it is the gut and it leads to the bad money. And I think the more you get out of that, it definitely becomes an age thing. You know, the more you get out of that, the more that you can start to become confident in saying in no. You know, this is something I talk about on, I did a TEDx talk a few years ago, and it was a lot of lessons that my old granddad taught me. One of them was, you know, if you're going to win something, you've got to be willing to lose it. And it's how it works. You don't mind spending a quid and spunking a quid on the national lottery, because if you win it, amen, I'm all right with that. And it's the same in business. It just scales differently. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot to unpack there. And I know this is not podcasting, but I think it's fascinating.
We very rarely end up on the topics that we set out with anyway. So,
finished on the topic that we decided to have at the beginning. We always just follow where the conversation goes.
This is it. I think you hit on something actually that has come up a few times. You know, one of the lessons from podcasting, to include the words that we said in the title, is that I've learned is that there's very often kind of trends, or like the moral to everybody's story is kind of similar or contains the same bits. Now, I know it's probably from the people who we have on a very like in a similar space and stuff, but you hit on the word like short-termism. So we've discussed in a few episodes, I think, the difference in the value of short-termism compared to long-termism. As, like from building anything, right? Like I think we talked about it from building a brand, but that can be anything, right? Whether that's through podcasting or through a tech company or through a platform or whatever. Like there's a big, especially now, right? Especially in early November in the year of COVID, like people are stuck in the short term or finding it more difficult to think in the long term. But like there's definitely more power in thinking long term, right? Getting over those short term hurdles.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's interesting because you get so you can't get anywhere long term without sorting out the short term.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If I can't go for a long term run and finish this marathon off unless I put my shoes on. Like it's that clear. You know, you can't win in the long term without figuring out the short term. But I think the thing with the short term is that you've got to see it for what it is, which is never really the fulfillment, and it's never really the vision. It shouldn't be the gratification. That's the problem, is a lot of people see it as gratification. Short term anything should just be proof points. It should just be proof. You know, we like Ian Anderson Gray, back to, you know, I can name him because he's brilliant, and he was our first podcaster on Captivate that was paying, and he was on Captivate before it was paying. He was helping us test it. And, you know, I said to him, look, you can use Captivate, but it won't work in all of these different places. And he was all right with that, because all he wanted to do was prove that he could do a podcast. And all we wanted to do was prove that we could generate a feed and get the analytics back. That was it. And I think if you apply that to business and life and everything else that goes alongside it, you start to do all right. Like patience is not something that you're born with. I think it's something you learn. It's like willpower. You learn it and you top it up. And, you know, certain people have got a natural propensity for patience and willpower than other people have. But I think ultimately it's something that you stock up on. It's something you learn to nurture and you learn to build upon. So short term should always be proof points, whether that is building a brand. So you're testing your messaging, you're testing your positioning, you're testing everything from your visual elements to the way that you vocalize your mission, or whether you're building tech, you know, whether you're proving your stack, whether you're proving your UI, whether you're proving your pricing model, your landing page, whether you're proving your onboarding or your retention processes or your some of your anti-churn stuff that you're building on the offboarding. It doesn't matter what that is. The end goal is to build a business that is sustainable. But all these things, all these tributaries flow into this one big kind of harbor at the end, which is the vision. And the short-term stuff never pays off, and you always get bored with it. Like, you always get bored of it. That's why people who are addicted to buying stuff get addicted to buying stuff, because once you've got the thing, you've got to use the thing, and they don't want to use it. They just want to keep buying the stuff. And it's like I said, it's the same in business, and it's the same in podcasting. You know, podcasting is fascinating. Like, the first thing that you should prove in podcasting is not, is anyone listening? It's not, do we do good content? It's, do I actually really fucking like podcasting?
Yeah.
Because if I hate podcasting, I ain't going to do it. If I hate swimming, I ain't going to do it. If I hate running, which I do, I ain't going to do it. That's why I put lockdown weight on. And it's very easy to see that the first thing you should prove in anything is, do I like doing it? Yeah. And then what do people say about what I'm doing? What do they like? That's the next proof point. So, yeah, again, piles to unpack. But, you know, to focus specifically on podcasting, the short term should be, do I like doing it? What do I enjoy doing about it? Do I hate this part of it? Do I hate that part of it? Some people love editing. I hate editing. Some people ask me editing questions. I'm like, I don't know. Ask the editor.
Who are those people?
I don't know, man.
Strange people.
I know, right? Those audio guys. Although I did talk to a friend of mine the other day who was a VO artist, and I had an interview on his show, and it was like the exact opposite of the conversation. He's like, oh, yeah, I love the editing. I'm like, what is wrong with him? But that's what it takes. It takes, like, it's like the video, like our video editor, Stephen. He's like, dude, I'm trying out some new video stuff. I'm like, I don't care, man. I'm trying out not talking for 5 minutes without coughing and saying the wrong thing. Like, that's all I'm trying out. You do your thing. But that's the beauty of it. It takes what it takes. Yeah. But you only come to those realizations like after the fact. You know, it took me probably, I think it probably took me about 30 episodes of my podcast to realize that no one wanted to hear Twat Me, which is like the podcast version. Hello there, this is Mark. I am a podcastinger. You know, like, no one wants to hear that. They want to hear this stuff, this kind of, and then the people that don't want to hear it, they don't listen to me. They go and listen to someone else. It took me probably another 30 episodes to realize I hated editing, because like the first 60 episodes were like, first 10, amazingly edited. First 20, not so good. Next 10, well, maybe not. And then the remaining 30 of the first 60 were like, you know, hang on, I can say all that sort of stuff just left in. And I think that's the thing, like, with, in particular with podcasting, is that because it's now revered as this big marketing thing and this big position yourself, build your brand, build your industry. Like, let's not forget, it started with people like me talking about DC Comics in our pants in a loft. Do you know what I mean? It's not, no one really expects you to be this amazing broadcaster, because if you were, you would be a broadcaster. You would you'd pursue that. And so there's no real reason to quit just because you've only got 10 listeners and you're not happy with the audio. As long as you enjoy doing it, you can refine that. Like, we talked in the off air a second ago about upgrading the microphones and every season getting new gear. Like, the amount of crap that I've got is just untold because I just like doing it that much. I keep buying it. But I didn't start like that. I started with this weird little blue snowball mic that sounded terrible.
Steve's got one. Well, I've just got. How dare you?
Mate, no, it was me. So this is the problem, right? This is the funny thing about it. So you can't see this, right? But when I got the blue snowball, I did the exact opposite of what you were doing, right? So I'm here, like, talking into the mic, like you are, like a normal human. I thought all microphones were broadcast. So I went like this. I was like, yeah, this is fine. So, like, I was way off it, dude. I continued to upgrade it, figured out what I was doing wrong, and got different kit, because I'm frankly terrible at that.
It's quite exciting, isn't it? Again, that new level of kit coming through, because the more you get into things, you know, the more that you do your research behind things, the more you understand the different elements towards it. I mean, our first mics were, I think I sent a message to Tim on WhatsApp just going, oh, they've got an offer on Amazon of a couple of mics for like £20. I'm going to get mine. And that was it. And they were terrible mics. But actually what it made us do is exactly what you just said, which was enjoy this medium. Mm. And we've always said all the way through this, and I've been a key driver in that message, is I don't care if there's one listener. I don't care if there's no listeners. I don't care if there's 5,000 listeners. It would be great to have all of that. But actually, I'm doing this for myself. I'm doing it for my own record to keep at the same time and to have good conversations and to learn from other people. And that's what I'm here for.
Yeah.
It's a little therapeutic as well. Sorry, Tim, to jump in. It's a little therapeutic. Like, I've got through a lot of shit. Like, I've got through, like, closing businesses down. I've got through divorces. The one divorce, I should add, not, like, multiple. I'm not, like, Hefner or whatever. I'm just cycling through that. but it becomes therapeutic, and you become very confident in yourself. Like, I'm a really introverted person. You know, when I spoke at Marketing Live with Tim, and Tim kindly invited me to speak there, I was like, okay, now, like, a lot of people that I've got, not on the stage, like the audience, I'm fine with that one. It was more like a lot of people I got to talk to, like, go around. You know, we talked about it, didn't we? You know, we're in the pub and got to walk around, everyone say hello, and I'm like, oh, I can't be doing this. I'm out. You know, I need 20 minutes in my room just to build the willpower back up to go out and be that extroverted version that I need to be. And podcasting kind of, it helped me become more articulate with that and helped me to build up the stamina. Like, I used to do 3 interviews on the bounce at like an hour each. I used to batch them. I used to record release 2 interviews a week and record 3 a week so that I got way in front of it and I didn't have to, you know, if I went on holiday or was sick or whatever, I could keep publishing. So it really kind of taught me how to self-edit. It taught me how to tell a little bit better story. Like, I'm not a good storyteller, but it made me a little bit better at it. It got me through some personal crap, like the divorce, and it got me through, like, closing the old agency down that we closed down to do what we're doing now. And a lot of these very bizarre times that you wouldn't really be able to articulate unless you were paying someone to listen, you know, unless you were going to a therapist. Like, the fact that, you know, the most divisive thing you can do is be yourself. The fact that there are people that will, on the contrary to that person saying F off to the unsubscribe on the email, the fact that there are people like Kipper and Felicia and Raph and Cam and Steve Lazarus at Yolland and Legacy and Tim and Paul and you, Steve, and people that will come back and say, you know what? That episode you did was absolutely bang on. We really, really enjoyed that. Keep doing more of that shit and I'll see you at Podcast Movement or I'll see you at Marketed Live. That gets you through stuff. And so I think when you start podcasting, you become a much more rounded person as well, because there's nothing more humbling than hearing yourself waffle on about shit. Like, there really isn't. And just that, like, I'm talking a lot now, it's what I do. But to hear it back, even now I'd cringe. I'd be like, dude, why are you talking so much, man? Shut up. But in comparison to like 5 years ago, at least I'm kind of staying on topic and making some sense. Like, before, I'd be all over the place. So it really teaches you how to do so many different things just by sticking a mic in front of you, because, like, the mic's your accountability.
Yeah.
Because it's recording it all, and then we can hear it back. There's nothing more humbling than that, you know?
It's really good. I think I wrote down, actually, one of the questions I was going to ask you is, like, related to something I've learned in this small window of podcasting. I think me and Steve recorded season one, which is just me and him talking about stuff that we're passionate about, for an hour and a bit, right? In August, I think we started recording, and September. So it's like new. It's still new to us. But, like, the way having conversations with other people, even just Steve, right, has helped me learn so much, right? I think there's, as a guy who's been doing this for ages, what is it about the power of conversation or podcasting that is such a powerful, what makes it such a powerful medium, two people talking or more than two people talking, do you think? Because it just, like, every episode, me and him finish with, that was amazing, I've learned so much. Like, the same outro every time. That was my favourite episode. Like, because, like, it's just so good still. Do you know what I mean? Well, have you got, what do you reckon, Mark? Does it get boring after a guy who's done so many episodes?
Do you know what? It's a weird thing. It can do. You know, I've just changed the podcast accelerator. So basically, I teach people, the tagline is design, create and launch or something, your own podcast. And it's just, I just talk about marketing a podcast and growing a podcast and, you know, industry insights, a bit of thought leadership stuff on there. And it's like less than 10 minutes an episode. And we used to do three a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. We just dropped it to two a week, Monday, Friday, and one being me solo. Sorry, they're both me solo. One being me devising the topic and one being like a question from the community. Well, we might have spotted it on YouTube or in a different community or someone's asked me this question. And, you know, it can get boring. It can. You know, after you've done, I've done maybe 1,200 podcast episodes now on podcasting. Like in total, which is really hard. But I'm still finding stuff to talk about, but it can get boring. There's some days where I think, are you kidding me? I don't want to do this. But then I end up doing what you've just said, which is, holy crap, that was awesome. The only thing that we want as humans is to be heard. That is it. We shout praise. We want to be heard. We build something. We want to be heard for the opinions that we've got on that something. And the validation that it brings us. And we record things. We create videos, we create audio and podcasts. So I think there's a shot of endorphins that come from a really stimulating conversation. Or in particular, even if you take the conversation out of it, a real stimulation that comes from thinking and letting your brain do the job that it's intended to do, which is to create thought and to articulate that thought in such a way that you own. And I think that's the beauty of podcasting is that you own that. That is your thing. You know, you have the mic and the roadcaster or whatever in front of you. Like you said, Steve, chronicling what you're saying. And, you know, we all want to be heard. And it's like an employee. An employee wants to turn up to work to do really good work. So just let them do good work, get out of their way. And that's their way of being heard. And I think that's why podcasting is such a, number one, an intimate medium, but one, such a medium that you don't necessarily get from, like, you know, blogging is, there's very little instant feedback because you are writing and then you're reviewing and it's kind of, it's a bit more passive. You know, you're not getting that instant feedback. Where you're podcasting, I can record it and then press play and it sounds like me and it feels like me and the inflections are there. So I think that's why, man.
I think it's bloody hard work as well, isn't it, blogging? You know, everybody's tried to do a blog at some point or another and, you know, unless you're Michael Owen, who's doing that many, you know, blogs, one a day for, you know, 10 years or whatever it is, and but you've committed to that. That whole thing of, I've got to sit down on a Sunday evening to write a blog for tomorrow becomes a really hard thing to do. Whereas when it's podcasting, what I find with it, what I really like about it is it's quite sporadic and it's not, oh, we're doing it on a Monday at 10 a.m. and we've got to do it on Monday at 10 a.m. You can make it fit. And that really suits me. I really like that about it because you can get passionate on different things at different times. But the main thing for me is, and it harks back to your previous point, Mark, about introverts, because I'm an introvert as well. And I think that's probably why we're both involved in tech rather than anything else. But it allows the introvert to have a voice because the only people who used to get heard, the people who love to stand on a stage, who love to get involved in Twitter arguments, who love to do all these different things, whereas introverts now can actually have a really good voice because they feel like they're talking to one person or two people or talking to themselves, but they're allowing other people to listen to that conversation. And I think that's why podcasting is becoming such an important medium of choice going forward. So those different viewpoints can be heard by different people.
Yeah, I agree. And I reckon it's something that you can refine as well, because if you are, you know, if you are an introvert, you can put all of your effort into blogging and never quite get your tone of voice across. You know, you can get damn close, but you can't ever get the inflections and the enunciation and the way that you feel passionate and the way that you raise and lift or drop when you find something that you love talking about versus something that's maybe challenging to talk about. And video is sort of the other extreme because you have to not just put your voice on the line, but you're putting your visual perspective on the line as well, where people can critique you. They might love your content, but they could say, oh yeah, shit. And for an introvert, that's really difficult to hear. You know, you it's very easy to be very sensitive about that. And I think podcasting gives you that. It gives you the platform that you need to be able to really shine as a person without having to deal with, honestly, that many trolls. You know, the people that are just going to slate you for anything that they can. So it's like you said, Tim, earlier, it acts a bit more like a filter where people just tune in for the content. You know, they come in for what you're saying. And they come in for how you're saying it, not what room you're saying it in, or what the light's like in your room, or how your hair looks, or what clothes you're wearing. They're coming for the actual content, probably above all of the mediums, you know, because video is very much, like I said, we can pick on 50 different things that aren't related to the content. Blogging, there's not really anything to pick on. It's just black and white opinion. And sure, you can try and get your tone of voice across. And I think podcasting is just this perfect little medium in between all of that, where you can say what you want to say, how you want to say it, but do it in such a way that no one can argue with anything but what you're saying, you know?
Yeah. That's a good point to round up on. We know you've got to go. So I've got one more question. As you're the world famous Mark Asquith in the podcast world anyway, and your podcast mentor, if you were to give us two, like early doors season two podcasters, a tip to end on, about not about this particular podcast but podcasting in general, what would that be? And then we'll let you go to your tech empire.
That'd be nice. Do you know, it's a funny one really, because like this conversational stuff is the stuff that tends to work best. I would probably just get yourself, like, there's nothing that I change about the format, because this is the format that you enjoy doing. And it would be very easy to say, well, you know, do a more narrative intro, or do a more structured format, or do segments and all that stuff that you can prove works with broadcast, but you'd kind of get bored of doing it because that's not what you're here for. I would say get yourself some kind of soundbite, you know, pick something that you want to use to market the show. And what works generally is, like, because everyone's now doing guesting on podcasting, like it's a PR person's, you know, top of the list, I think you've got to get things from the interviewers, or the interviewees, sorry, that they don't necessarily dig into on anyone else's show. I did one with a guy called Billy Samoa-Seely a while ago, and he, holy crap, that guy dug in. He did his research on stuff, and it's a very different show. Like, we didn't have to dig in on this because we were here to talk about podcasting. But he was like, dude, in 2016, you did this blog post about this particular thing. Talk about it. I was like, fuck, all right. I'm like digging back. I'm like, what did I feel like then? And it was fascinating, because I'll share that interview, because he did the research and he got the sound bites from me that, frankly, no one else has got the stuff that he's got, because he did that dig. So that's the only thing I'd say, is that if you want the marketability around this, not just the social shares on, oh, Matt came on the podcast, you know, if you want me to snip the bit that's interesting, just get someone to talk about stuff they never talk about. And you've got to laterally research on that. You can't do the usual stuff, but no one's doing that. No one takes the time to do that. There are only a few people that do that. I think Billy did it well. Jordan Harbinger does it well. Maybe Steve Lazarus, Your London Legacy, does it well. That's the thing that I think will stand any interview out, is just one little bit that you can hook to that gets me to talk about stuff that I've never done before. So that would be it.
Thanks. That was a good tip. I just started to subscribe to another podcast of a guy who's coming on, actually, called Call to Action Podcast. And he's really good as well. Like, I was listening to him and he's obviously done so much research. I was like, holy crap, this guy does some stuff that I don't do. Like, it was referring, when you performed on stage about this thing, you mentioned this reference to a book. How is that book? And you're like, what? Well, how do you know that?
That's on page 12. Like, it's a funny one though. It does. Like, if you want to really, and this is not you guys, but just the royal you, you know, if you want to get good at being an interviewer, you've got to study interviewing, not what you do. And a lot of people don't do that. Like, look at Jordan Harbinger's great at this. Like, look at how he lets an interview run, but then he'll bring it back, or he'll nudge it in a certain direction. And you don't even know he's doing it, but he does a lot of work on that. But I think what the interesting part of that, the kind of core takeaway with that, is that he doesn't do too much research, that it stymies the conversation. What he does is very specific research into very specific pieces. Another great example of this recently is where, so Steve Lazarus, we helped him when I was back in the day doing sort of podcast coaching and mentoring, with launching Your London Legacy, which is telling the timeless tales of London's hidden personalities. It's a beautiful little idea, and it's really London-centric. So we got Andy McNab on the show, and I'm a huge Andy McNab fan. Like, the books behind me, there's a shit ton of Andy McNab books. And if you get Animate Nab on your podcast, you think Bravo 2.0, you think Immediate Action, you think the Gulf War, you think SAS. No. Steve did the stuff that no one else did, which is the work he did on being a good psychopath, like he's a clinical psychopath. But he's a functioning good psychopath, which is what they call it. And he dug into that very specific thing. And it was one of the best interviews I've heard for a long time because he went to that tiny little place that no one else went to. And he saw a spike in downloads. You know, Andy McNab was like, this is a badass interview. There was a lot in there that just came from that narrow bit of research. So he didn't do research on everything. He did like 1 hour on one bit that he'd never spoken about before. And that was the key to the interview.
Nice. I might check that out, actually. That sounds like a really interesting episode. But Mark, we've come to the end of the time. I'm going to let you go, my friend. Thanks very much for coming on. Do you want to tell people where they can get hold of you? We'll stick all the links in the show notes, obviously, but how can people best get hold of you and check you out?
Well, thank you very much. This has been awesome. Thanks for letting me ramble on about stuff. I appreciate it. It's rare that I get to do that without having to go through, let's do a fire round. You know what I mean? I'm glad for that one.
That's our feature for the next season.
Oh, no. All right, I'll be back. I'll come back for the fire round.
We'll do some research.
Yes, you could do like some of those off, like, you know, when interviewers like ask weird questions, like, I know, like, it's a very serious podcasting interview. What's your favorite color cheese?
We know that you bought an aubergine in Tesco's in 2014. What did you do with it?
Yeah, and like they do like more random ones as well. They'll go like, you bought an aubergine in Tesco in 2014. What is your favorite internet provider? And you're like, what? A little ambiguous. But no, thanks, guys. This has been brilliant. Just hit me up on Twitter. Thanks for the kind words on Captivate. You guys have plugged that, so thank you. Just hit me on Twitter if anyone's got any questions, if anyone wants to chat podcasting, at Mr. Asquith. That's the best way to connect, and we'll just shoot the breeze over there. But yeah, thanks, guys. This is awesome.
Cheers. Thanks very much, Matt. That was Mr. Mark Asquith. The podfather. So funny.
I know you said podfather before we, you know, spoke to him, but he really is the podfather.
It was good. And yet again, on form, we talked about a lot of other stuff, like lessons from podcasting, like business lessons and life lessons from podcasting. I think this title would have been, in hindsight.
I've loved this series for that type of, you know, We have ideas when we go into these conversations that are things that we think we might talk about, but we don't try and dictate the conversation to that. We try and let it free flow into whatever happens. And, you know, to go into those whole short-termism, long-termism, you know, that applies to any business, doesn't it? It doesn't just apply to podcasting and what have you. So really insightful. Great to see that side of the coin from somebody who's built a great tech company.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, a massively experienced podcaster, a marketer, he's been front and centre of that industry for a long time. Like when I first went self-employed in 2010, I got an interview on his, what was his show called there? 7-Minute Mentor? Before that. It was something before that. He interviewed me on social media when I did that for a living, which was a long time ago. But it was, you know, he was top of the game then in terms of being the British podcast guy, and he's done so much. But I think it just cements what we were talking about in the show, that podcasting and conversation as a medium, right, gives us so much, like, it's such a learning exercise. I've known Mark for donkeys, right? And this is not the first conversation, and I've still learned a bunch from him today.
Yeah. But every conversation we have, we learn, and not just through this, but in multiple conversations in life. And it's just nice to be able to document it through podcasting, those things that we've picked up on from just speaking to some really clever minds.
Yeah.
People who don't even realise that they're really clever minds. That's the best thing about it. Like I said to Mark before, we're talking to people who aren't extrovert a lot of the time, and we're getting to find out that inner working. And that for me is like gold dust, being able to hear new voices and new thought processes in the same thing that we're all trying to reach, which is just enjoyment in life or better marketing or whatever it is.
Well, like Mark says, like there was two of the biggest things, that everybody just wants to be heard, right? I think is a life knowledge bomb, and something we'll highlight in the show notes. And that ability for conversation to get, I don't know, to get maybe go a little deeper. I certainly don't know what I think about stuff until I say it a lot of the time. And this podcast and the previous seasons has made me realise that sometimes I don't know what I think about a thing.
I think the one thing that's I've really took away is actually it makes me question some of my thought processes previous. And it's made me not change, but it's made me understand that I might have had a different viewpoint, but I can now see somebody else's viewpoint. And I think that's really powerful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really powerful.
Yeah, there's definitely, you know, it can be, as you've said, you know, it can be insular being in this game, right? Like with, like doing client work, doing marketing work, it can be knocking ideas around your head. So you've got, you know, because you want to be heard, as Mark says, but using a podcast and it being cathartic where you have to share ideas, right? You have to get them out of your mind and off your notebook into the air, into conversation, proves like is a good proof point. Is
yeah,
like it's cathartic getting stuff out of your head into a conversation, because you can't sit here in silence, apart from Steve Chapman's The Sound of Silence podcast, which we're not on, but you've got to converse, right? You've got to ask challenging questions. You've got to ask open questions. You've got to pose things that will start conversations, right? You can't, like, it's a skill, right? And it's literally my favorite thing. I know we've only done a few months of it, but I can't imagine not doing it nowadays. But
that was where my big question that I alluded to before was leading to.
Go on, right?
So marketing shit. We all know marketing shit, right? I think we've said it a few times. It's not, but it's so convoluted, and the way that people perceive it is completely wrong half the time. So if you had your time again, Tim, would you do something completely different, or would you carry on the route that you're going on, but then double down and focus on things like podcasting? Look at that unprompted question.
That's a good question. So I'd probably do marketing because it's such a field that lets you be you if you give yourself that permission, right? There's so many aspects to marketing. I have never been, sorry to all my previous clients, very good at doing the work, right? Doing the marketing work for people, right? It's not my forte, but teaching people why that work is important and getting them to understand what work they should do and how they should even do it, right? I find super, super interesting. It drives me to this day, right? Is helping people unpack that, which is still marketing, right? But I am not one to write your copy or design you a thing or run your AdWords campaign. Sorry, people. But, you know, and luckily, I just think it's in me, right? I've always been, I'm just a human-centered person. And as we said in an early episode, right, marketers is the voice of that humanity within an organization or a thing. And I think it allows me to champion that in my little version of marketing, which I know is not everybody's, but it's mine.
Yeah. Interesting.
Interesting indeed. Interesting indeed. But well, let's wrap this up, Steve. That was Mark Asquith. Yes. Any final comments, my dear?
No, I just want to say thanks to Mark. I know he was busy. He's just had one of the three things that everybody hates in life, you know, with a house move. Yep. So, you know, thanks for your time, Mark. Really appreciate it. And on to more podcasting. Let's just do more podcasting.
On to more podcasting. So this is the penultimate one, I think, isn't it, of season 2. We've discovered another person that we're going to squeeze in the end for a surprise one. So we'll catch you next time. Don't forget to subscribe and share and comment if you like these episodes, because we will read them.
We always read them.